This is Diane Myers, Senior Research Director at Metrigy, and welcome to this episode of Metrigy Metrosite. I'm excited to be joined for this episode with Greg Veig, Senior Director, Solutions Marketing at Ribbon. In this episode, we're going to discuss the repercussions of Microsoft making changes to its Azure for Operators business and what it means for service providers utilizing Metaswitch solutions. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's start with an introduction on your role and responsibilities within Ribbon.
Well, my title is the Senior Director of Solutions Marketing. Basically, that's product marketing within Ribbon. And I focus on our Cloud and Edge business unit, which is the group that develops and markets the our traditional telecom solutions, all the things you would think that a service provider would need to build out a telephone network.
Right. So for background for the audience, in early June, word started spreading, right, that Microsoft was going to let go of a large number of employees attached to the Azure for Operators division. And these employees being from acquisitions from Metaswitch and Affirm Networks, both of which make up or have historically made up a large portion of that Azure division. So, you know, today, Greg and I, we're going to really discuss and focus in on the Metaswitch part of the business. Later, right after, you know, the word came out about employees being, you know, let go, we learned that there was products that were on a path for end of life, right? And actually, you know, it has become more apparent that is actually true, right? And so customers have been formally notified, right, that the end of sale of the Metaswitch products is occurring, but that they will continue to fulfill obligations to existing customers. So, Greg, you and I spoke about this when it was all kind of coming out. And I'll be honest, I never fully bought into Microsoft kind of being in that core carrier infrastructure space to begin with. But I was still shocked, right? You know, this was, you know, that there's a, yeah, I mean, they had a lot of customers, a lot of companies rely on them, you know. So what were some of your initial thoughts when you started hearing about the news?
Well, I think like everyone else, I was surprised by the sort of the speed and the depth of the activity. You know, I think in telecom, we're used to things happening over a long period of time. And this was very different, right? You talked about really almost everyone in sales, most of the R&D team all let go. I kind of feel like from what I can see, most everyone but support was laid off almost on the same day. There just wasn't the sort of normal long cycle time that a service provider would normally get. They would sort of be in the loop or at least know something was coming. That wasn't the case. And then on a personal level, obviously, like you and probably many of the people listening, I had friends who worked there, so it was discouraging for me to see that happen to them personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just share some of my kind of initial thoughts too, right? So, you know, as I mentioned, I was kind of shocked, right? I didn't think it was a good fit when the acquisition happened, but, you know, once companies, you know, do that, you know, you don't expect them, especially a company the size of Microsoft, right, to, you know, that was in 2020. So, right, we're about 4 years in, right, to
right.
You know, kind of walk away from the business, right? And, but, you know, it's very different, right? So, you know, we think about Microsoft and the Azure cloud business, and then we think about the Metaswitch, right? So we're talking about those Metaswitch assets. A lot of that's kind of core class 5, class 4 switch replacement solutions. And it's very different than selling cloud capacity or even enterprise services, right? When we think about Microsoft Teams and, you know, 365 and kind of, you know, core enterprise cloud-based services, what Metaswitch business is all about is a lot of that underlying infrastructure for carriers, and it's very different. Operators, right? So we have telcos that have gone and invested quite significant sums of money, right, to overhaul their networks with the Metaswitch products, right? So from soft switches and gateways and session border controllers and app servers. And, you know, and these are not projects that you can flip in a month, right? And so to me, you know, it puts a lot of these companies in a tough situation, right? In terms of, you know, who will continue to support long term, what happens for expansion and things like that. So there's a lot of ramifications for existing clients. And I think that's what I really, you know, I wrote a piece shortly after, and that was kind of my, you know, my take is that this is going to be tough for existing clients. And I heard that, right. You know, it quickly spread. I know a lot of these operators, and, you know, there was some shock and disbelief, right. And what's happening and, you know, what do they do going forward?
Yeah, we've had the same kind of engagements with customers after this. As you could expect, we took a lot of phone calls as well, because service providers are trying to figure out what to do. You know, you mentioned there's two elements to it. One is the amount of investment, and also the time it takes to migrate.
Yep.
So that's a big challenge, yeah, regardless of who you are as a provider.
Yeah, and the investment isn't just in the equipment and the software and the solutions. It's then the expertise internally to manage those systems, right? Correct. So there's investment on that part of it also, the internal investment you have to make in your management team to, you know, to keep these solutions up and running, right? So it's across the board, right? You know, gosh, at the end of the day, when I looked at this and I wrote about it, my takeaways don't change in terms of if I'm an operator, what do I do, right? So I suspect, right, for most existing clients, they'll sit on those assets for a while, right, to really thoroughly kind of figure out their next steps, right? Microsoft, I believe, you know, has told them, right, that they will continue to support them in the near term. I don't know, you know, how long, what that near term means for, say, right? Is that in the next year, 2 years, 6 months, right? It's hard to say, but if I'm a tier one operator, or maybe I'm a smaller rural carrier that use the Metaswitch products, you know, my best bet is probably to sit and evaluate what are the best next steps for me, and just continue to manage those assets. Now, if I'm someone new and I'm making a big change, clearly I'm not going to go with the Microsoft products, right? If they were my short list, or if I had just chosen them over the last 6 months, but I hadn't implemented anything, right? And we really came down to that there was a handful of options for companies, right? For these Metaswitch customers. And one, really, you know, and I even said this, right? The big winner would really be Ribbon, right? Your company.
Right.
First, because it has the product and the service expertise that really matches what Ribbon had. From a perspective of, you know, I'm going to rip out, you know, soft switches or gateways or SBCs, and I'm going to run and manage them myself in my network, right? I could go with a cloud option, right? There are some options out there for companies who are saying, well, I'm going to just wholesale it from a cloud provider. And then there's point products, right? So I could go to someone who's just doing application servers or session border controllers. So there are, or maybe I need the UC applications. So there are some point products I could use. I could go to a cloud provider and just say, oh, look, I'm not even going to manage it myself. I'm just going to go right there. Or, you know, like, as I mentioned, in Ribbon. You know, so from that perspective, right, knowing that, you know, Ribbon is in a position of really being able to help a lot of these companies, you know, right, you know, make a migration, what would your kind of first piece of advice be to them, right? You know, in the sense of, you know, how do they navigate these changes for themselves?
Well, I think maybe the easiest thing to just talk about some of the engagements we've had already, and I would kind of break them up into three groups. One, we've had some great calls with people who are just trying to investigate their options and yeah, understand sort of strategically what we have to offer that would be comparable. And we are lucky we have a complete portfolio, as you said, and really almost product for product, we have something similar to what Metaswitch offered. The other scenarios, we have customers, as you mentioned, who were in the middle of an implementation or were just about to start an implementation, obviously, as you said, It would be, I probably described it as foolhardy if you went ahead and did that based on what Microsoft has said to those customers, which is that basically there's only support going forward. And then there's scenarios where people might say, well, I had a near-term activity for this year or early next year. I needed some session border controllers for one site or something like that. And they had initially assumed they would just add some licenses to their Metaswitch environment. In those scenarios, people are coming to us and saying, okay, I don't want to spend additional dollars or euros there. What are my options versus being in a support environment? And then I think kind of from an advice perspective, I think the other thing to consider is there is a difference between what might be contractually obligated support and the support that somebody might get today on those products. Obviously, as time goes by, the number of people in those kind of support roles and the expertise declines over time. So I think if you're a service provider, you do have to be thinking, I have a relatively short window by service provider standards, a couple of years, whatever it is, to really have a plan in place for what I'm going to do because these networks are all IP based. They're, subject to the same vulnerabilities. The software gets old. If somebody's not actively engaged in upgrading those, there is inherent risk. I mean, you look at any chart on that we create or anyone else creates on software vulnerabilities, and you'll see the older the software release, the more vulnerabilities are in that because we all use Linux. We all use Apache web server. We use, a whole series of, some FTP server, a whole series of industry standard open source solutions. And if those aren't regularly being updated, then you're creating risk. And that's more than just support in that instance.
Yeah, so really, Greg, what you're saying is, operators, and I actually would agree, right? Shouldn't wait too long, right, to kind of
Yeah.
figure out what their next step is in this regard, right? I mean, I think they probably all have some time, right? They don't have to make a quick decision, right? But
Right.
they can't be sitting on it for too long, right? Because
Right.
then issues are going to happen.
It's not like an old DMS where you could leave it there and it would just do the same thing forever.
Right.
These are much more modern platforms, and that gives them a lot of value, but it also means that they have to be kept up to date from a security perspective.
Right. And you snuck in there euros, right? We're talking, you said dollars or euros. And so I think it's important to note, right, that this is not just a North America market.
Absolutely.
This is Metaswitch absolutely had clients in Europe. They had some pockets of Asia, and they even had some in South America. So,
Absolutely.
Metaswitch, their largest install base is North America, but they were operating and selling to service providers globally, right? So this is so this is definitely across the globe. But when we think about just North America, right, where there is considerable assets that we still need to migrate to IP, right? There is still a lot of operators that have those DMSs or the traditional Class 5 switches. Are we ever going to see TDM go away? Right. I know that's the age-old question. And I, even though I don't really cover this market anymore, people still ask me, right? They're always
Well,
asking, like, what does that look like? And so I know there is still this ongoing, big question out there is what's the opportunity?
it appears to be kicking and screaming, Diane, that it's going away. But I think we are starting to finally see it happen. We have a couple of recent examples. We announced just a couple of months ago a substantial deal with Verizon where they're doing a major push to move Class 5 switching to migrate. We just a couple of weeks ago we announced a similar activity with Brightspeed. They're maybe even more so aggressively migrating their network. And we announced in our earnings call, we didn't say who, we had another major provider, a cable provider who was also in the process of doing that. And I think it's all driven by the same sort of basic economics, which is the cost of power, the cost of space, and then the third piece is the retirement of so many of the people who could run those legacy networks. When you look at these service providers who I mentioned, you know, they can see a clear cost justification just based on power and space. I think the challenge has been for a lot of service providers is the last few years they have been aggressively investing in fiber. They've been aggressively investing in wireless spectrum and RAN. And so these areas have sort of gotten ignored, but they're starting to recognize that it is not going to be quick to move some of these environments. And so if they don't start now, they'll essentially never finish. You know, I always say the story of, hey, if you moved, if you moved two central offices every weekend of the year, you know, excluding a couple of holidays, you'd be lucky to move 100. Well, consider that some service providers have thousands of central offices. They're not going to be done for 20 or 30 years at that pace. It can't happen. They can't operate that way.
And just to that point, right, understanding that there is still substantial numbers of class five networks out there. There is a lot of companies, you know, whether it's, you know, they've been in process now for, you know, 10, 15 years, or they're just kind of more, you know, in the thick of it. They're still in need of these products, right?
Absolutely.
It's not like as if this is, you know, it's absolutely, you know, not a a boom market like it used to be, you know, 15, 20 years ago when things were, when migrations were really starting to happen, but there is still substantial opportunity. The other thing is, and I didn't mention this, you know, when we're talking about options, is around IMS, right? So we do know, right, a lot of operators, particularly if they have the wireless core, the mobile core, and also European and Asia providers have already, they've chosen IMS, right? So they've done all of their transformation on IMS across the mobile and the fixed line. And the Metaswitch clients, you know, that Metaswitch did have some IMS capabilities. They had done stuff in pure software for the cloud, but they didn't have the kind of the traction that we see the three really large vendors have, right, in the mobile space. And I think, you know, we think about who the bread and butter for Metaswitch clients were or are, that IMS doesn't really make a lot of sense for them because they don't necessarily have the mobile. They're very fixed line, and the complexities around IMS, even though IMS has been around for a long time, you know, it's still there. It's still a lot more complex to go and implement that. When if I'm a purely fixed line carrier or, you know, a cable operator, I can do this with traditional class five soft switches and gateways, and I don't necessarily need to go through the whole IMS. So that's my opinion that I wanted to kind of share in this discussion.
Well, Diane, I generally would tend to agree with you. You know, we have a full IMS core solution. We have built cloud native SBCs, and a huge chunk of our portfolio is cloud native, all microservices based. But the reality is, in a lot of these sort of traditional class five environments that we were just talking about, particularly in North America, it's not cost effective to move to an IMS core, even if in the case of the service provider owns one. And the reason is because, again, this is very North America focused, is you have the Public Service Commission who has feature requirements in each LATA, and you can't just walk away from those. So if you're going to have a solution, it has to meet the existing requirements. And then don't forget about OSS BSS. We talk about the investment in the switch, but if you think about what it means to a large service provider in terms of their front office and back office and billing, and how you push a button and get a telephone line moved from one place to another, those IMS core solutions were designed for the mobile network and mobile provisioning. They're not connected at all to a lot of these legacy systems. And the millions, maybe even tens of millions of dollars you would have to spend to add the feature functionality and add the OSS BSS integration is substantially more than it takes to migrate to a more traditional solution. And it's obvious that it is more cost effective because that's exactly what we see service providers doing.
So any last kind of, as we wrap up, kind of words of wisdom or advice you would offer providers that are in this situation, that they're sitting on these assets and, kind of what's the, what pearls do you have for them?
I'm not sure I have any pearls. I think they are in a challenging situation. I think, as we said before, it doesn't cost anything to understand your options. We encourage people, and we as we've already had to talk with us, they can see what we can do for them. They can understand that, and they can plan for it because, again, budgeting is often a multi-year process in their environments, and they have to manage it against the other initiatives they have as a company. And this came from out of the sky, so to speak, I guess out of the cloud. And and so they need to figure it out. And but they shouldn't just wait. And that is sometimes what happens in our industry. And I don't think that's probably necessarily the smartest idea.
And I would agree. So that wraps up this episode of Metrosite. I'd like to again thank Greg for joining us. Invite you to check out Ribbon and more specifically its Carrier Voice Solutions. If you like this episode, please share with your friends and colleagues. Remember that we publish Metrosite on a bi-weekly basis, so be sure to check out our archives and keep your eye out for future episodes. Thank you, and so long.
Thanks, Diane.